I don't think it is a coincidence that Deacon Greg went off on vacation the same time we read a gospel with a plethora of names that are impossible to pronounce. I think he did that on purpose to me. Thankfully, I learned a special technique in seminary for just these scenarios, which is to speak fast, mumble, and with confidence. It'll make it look like I know what the heck I'm saying. Last week, I tried something new with the 7:30 a.m. Mass that I was considering to continue to do throughout this season of Advent. And I asked them to give me their feedback, and they responded very positively. So I'm going to continue to do this during Advent. And what I did and will do today, and for the rest of Advent, is give my homily in two parts. The first part is to comment and reflect upon why we do certain things at Mass. We go through the motions so easily, it can be good to remind ourselves why we do things so that we can bring some more intentionality into them when we do them. The second part will be like a usual homily, but shorter. So last week I spoke about why we bless ourselves with holy water upon entering and exiting the church. Today, I would like to talk about why, when we enter and exit our pew, we genuflect. The first thing we need to keep in mind is who we are genuflecting to. Now, obviously that is God, but we genuflect in a particular way to Jesus in the Eucharist. You may notice that when Father Dennis and I come to the foot of the sanctuary at the end of the procession, we bow. That is because our tabernacle is not directly behind the altar. If it was, we would genuflect. Now, at its core, genuflecting is a gesture of obedience and humility, as well as a sign of respect. In the ancient world, when one would come before a king, one would genuflect with their left knee. We genuflect with our right, to signify that Jesus is not only an earthly king, but a heavenly one. He is greater. But there's something else in this act which I didn't even consider until I was doing research for today. And that is that the very posture of genuflecting places us in an unbalanced and a vulnerable state. When genuflecting, we're easily pushed over. We are physically in a compromised position. We are, in a sense, at the mercy of the one we are genuflecting to. The symbolism of this, then, is clear. Every time we genuflect, we are placing our life at the mercy of God. We are speaking with our bodies and saying, Lord, I place myself, my life, at your mercy, to obey you in humility and respect. I place all the sufferings, anxieties, all of the joys of my life before you. They're all yours. Do with them what you will. The beautiful part is that we're doing this to a God who has placed himself at our mercy, containing himself in a piece of bread, completely vulnerable. We are just doing to God what he has already done for us. Okay, now on to part two. In the gospel, we hear a quote from the prophet Isaiah reminding us of the attitude we should have during this season of Advent, that we should be preparing the way of the Lord. Now, there are many ways we can do this, and often depends on our individual life, but the gospel provides a model and framework to reflect upon. But I have to say, when I first read the gospel, I was a little unsettled. I love nature. I love being outside. I have hiked volcanoes, gone on canoe camping trips, fishing. I love it all. So when I read in the gospel that to prepare the way of the Lord, that meant that every valley would be filled every mountain and hill laid low, became kind of sad. Because I personally do not see those as obstacles to God, but proof of his existence and inspiration to follow him, just the immense beauty of it all. In fact, thinking of a flat world seems boring to me. Sorry if any flat earthers are here. And while it may be easier to traverse, it kind of takes the adventure out of it. So to me, this gospel didn't make much sense. That is until I read the final line of the gospel, which is often the case. We often do not wait until the end. When it says, "And all flesh shall see the salvation of God." The purpose of filling the valleys and laying low the mountains is so that nothing obstructs our view from seeing God. Sometimes that includes the things that are sinful and bad, and sometimes that includes even the things we find beautiful and good. To prepare the way of the Lord in our life means to reflect upon what is blocking our vision from seeing him. What valley, no matter how deep and dark, what mountain, no matter how grand and beautiful, is preventing us from seeing God. In the first reading, the prophet Baruch implores the people to look to the east, toward the rising sun. The more valleys and mountains in our lives, the longer it will take for us to see it. Advent is about preparing ourselves so that we can see the light of the sun before it even peaks the horizon. In 2 weeks, the sun quietly appears in a manger, and all who were present were some shepherds and 3 kings, because they were prepared. The rest of the world had to wait until the radiance of the resurrection to know that the sun had indeed risen, to rise above the mountains and valleys of our life. The shepherds and the Magi knew 33 years prior to the dawn. May we be so prepared that no valley or mountain may obstruct us from so great a sight.